Hello, my name is Dr. Thomas Rounds. I'm a GP in London and the Essential Knowledge Updates clinical lead. And today I'm talking to Davina Maru about a recent EKU module on sudden onset dizziness and vertigo. Hi, Davina.
Hi, Tom.
Davina, I understand you're a GP trainee and you've got a real interest in ENT and audiology.
Yes, so I'm a GP trainee and I'm part of the Greenwich VTS scheme in South East London. But my interest in hearing stemmed from medical school. So during my intercalation year, I completed my master's in audiological science at UCL. And then I did some clinical experience around audiology in hearing imbalance, audiology rehabilitation, and pediatric audiology. And then I kind of continued my interest within that role and contributed to ENT-related consultations from NICE, the UK National Screening Committee. I was appointed to the NIHR Hearing Theme Board as the primary care advisor for hearing loss. And then the RCGP also appointed me as their clinical champion. So yeah, I've really enjoyed particularly specialising in this area within general practice.
That's brilliant. Thank you. You have written one of our EKU modules before, which is great. And thank you for being part of this podcast today. So the EKU module is based on a recent BJGP paper, which was looking at sudden onset dizziness and vertigo. So I guess we could start from the beginning. What is dizziness and vertigo and how common it might be in primary care?
So dizziness is a very common complaint in primary care, and it's actually the most common reasons for GP appointments for those over the age of 75, as said in the ENT news article. But the problem is that dizziness is a very non-specific term, and it can mean quite a lot of different things to different people. So firstly, you need to ascertain from the patient what they actually mean by dizziness. Sometimes to them it might mean lightheadedness, it could be a weakness, then you might be thinking a neurological impairment. They might feel a bit faint and like presyncope. They might just feel a bit unsteady on their feet, or they might actually feel real vertigo where the room is spinning around them. So the first thing is just figure out what do they mean by dizziness.
So it's coming back to being a good general practice, good GP, which is, you know, good history taking, actually, you know, trying to work out what they mean by the dizziness. Because as you say, it's a very broad term and there could be potentially language barriers around that, or we might define it differently to patients.
Exactly. And if you feel that they are struggling to describe what they mean by dizziness, then you just need to change tactics and use your GP skills. So then you might want to ask, actually, this feeling that you have, is it constant or episodic? Is it triggered or is it spontaneous? Is it associated with other symptoms? And then as you start getting all of these answers, you can start devising a differential list in your head. So for example, if they say it's associated with other symptoms, they might say nausea, vomiting, and then you might be thinking, oh, it could be potentially menias. They might say it's triggered with different movements of the head, then you might be thinking BPPV. So there's a different way to approach it if they're not being very clear about what they mean by dizziness.
My approach for vertigo is I always get people to imagine like you're on a boat and you're feeling like you're rocking from side to side. I don't know if that's right. When I felt it before, it feels a bit like you're on a boat and you get off and you feel like you're sort of spinning around. Is that a reasonable way to describe it?
Yes, no, that's a really good analogy. They say vertigo is as if the room is spinning around you, and it's that illusion of movement. But what clinicians do forget that it doesn't always have to be rotational, and vertigo is actually more commonly due to inner ear than neurological disorders. So the vertigo causes can actually be split into two. So there's essential causes that you should be definitely aware of, like brainstem strokes, vestibular migraines, whereas peripheral causes might be less sinister things like BPPV, Meniere's disease. So it's kind of trying to ascertain what they actually mean by vertigo, because it is an illusion of movement.
It's a really common presentation to primary care, but as you say, it could be loads of different causes. So it could be something that could be peripheral and reassuring that it hopefully would settle. But as we've said, it could potentially be somewhat worrying causes, right?
Exactly. So I suppose you can split the causes of dizziness using a sort of systematic approach that we've always learned as medics. So you can think, okay, cardiovascular causes, could it be postural hypertension? Could it be a stroke? Can it be a cardiac arrhythmia? And you might think neurological causes, could it be something to do with peripheral neuropathy and epilepsy, MS? But then you start thinking autological causes like Meniere's disease, BPPV, vestibular neuritis and labyrinthitis. It might even have autosclerosis. And then you might think about metabolic causes like hypoglycemia or hypothyroidism or adrenal insufficiency. or even psychogenic causes. It could be a migraine headache, could be autoimmune related. So take it as a systematic approach first when thinking about your differential.
So that's a really good example. I think also for trainees as well, actually, you really do need to approach this in a very medical way to think about actually what are the potential worrying causes, what are the more likely causes. So maybe we could go through like a sort of typical patient. And like a lot of us now, I'm doing mainly triage before seeing someone. So I'm often doing sort of telephone triage. So I might get someone on my list that is saying sort of dizziness or other symptoms. So how would you approach that case?
So when you have someone with dizziness, make sure you take that very, very clear history, figure out what the patient means by dizziness. And then if they're not clear about it, ask about the associated symptoms, whether it's episodic, whether it's triggered.
I work in an area which is multi-ethnic and some people there's a bit of language barrier. So I probably have a low threshold to bring people in with dizziness just to sort of rule out causes. I mean, does that reflect in your practice as well?
Yes, and I would completely agree. I would bring them in to examine them because there's a lot of bedside tests that a GP can do to assess the dizziness to make sure it's not a sinister cause. So you might want to do cranial nerve examination. You might want to do a Romberg's test, Rinne's and Weber's if you think it's an autological related cause. And one of the most important things is the HINTS test, which stands for head impulse, test of skew, deviation and nystagmus. And that's to ensure that they haven't got a central cause problem going in. And this can be really done when you see them in person and you assess them. So I would definitely have a low threshold for bringing these patients in, especially if they're not clear about what they mean by dizziness.
And I guess also correlated with age, so probably younger patient, you'd be more reassured it's likely to be a peripheral cause, so it can't be 100%. Obviously, it depends if you get a very clear history, but certainly if it's more of an older patient, I generally would have a lower threshold for bringing them in, certainly for a physical exam or if there was any language barrier or if I wasn't certain of the diagnosis.
Exactly. And you alluded to some common disorders, so common balance disorders that we tend to see, so BPPV. So the vertigo is usually triggered by specific changes in the position of your head, lasting 30 to 40 seconds. Then you have Meniere's disease. The vertigo tends to last 20 minutes to hours, and they might have that triad of tinnitus, that fluctuating sensory neural hearing loss and that fullness in the ear. Labyrinthitis, so that's inflammation of both your vestibular and cochlear branches of the eighth cranial nerve. They might have vertigo lasting days to weeks and hearing loss / tinnitus. Vestibular neuritis, which is commonly caused actually by viral infections, and their vertigo can last days to weeks, and they're normally associated with nausea, but the hearing is spared, which is different to the labyrinthitis.
Okay, because often I think people might call something viral labyrinthitis when actually they mean vestibular neuritis.
The way I can remember it is the labyrinth is sort of, imagine the labyrinth of the ear. So automatically I think about, oh, that's associated with hearing loss. Whereas vestibular neuritis, I think just purely the nerve. So I don't link up with the hearing symptoms. That's how I try and remember the difference.
So obviously, let's go back to thinking about the sort of examination. So where I approach it, we'll obviously look at the patient. I do a cardiovascular check first, like pulse, blood pressure, sitting and standing. Just I check for any murmurs. And then I then go maybe a quick neurological examination. And it's all trying to do this in your 10 to 15 minute consultation, which is quite tough. I may do a gross neurological exam or maybe a more focused one if I'm concerned. We then went on to sort of talking a bit about these special tests. So I feel fairly confident in a hall pike. I haven't done any HINTS tests, so maybe if you could talk through the HINTS tests in a bit more detail.
So HINTS test stands for head impulse nystagmus test of skew deviation. And it's basically a test for ruling out stroke from the peripheral vestibular disorders like vestibular neuritis. So the HI head impulse, so the person sits upright and you ask them to keep their gaze fixed on yourself as a GP. And you turn the head about 20 to 40 degrees to one side and you watch their eyes. So normal response, so a normal peripheral vestibular system may suggest central pathology. So that basically means your eyes remain fixed on the examiner, whereas the abnormal response is if the eyes are dragged off the target by the turning action. And then you'll get these correct movements called saccades as the eyes move back to the examiner. So confusingly, the abnormal response is therefore reassuring as it suggests the peripheral cause is not a central one.
Okay, that makes sense. I think I'll probably have to watch a video to go through it again. I mean, it's like the sort of hall pike. I kind of picked it up as a registrar. I watched some videos, had a practice with colleagues, and then actually I got quite proficient at it. I find it quite satisfying actually to do a diagnostic hall pike and then an Epley in my clinic, because then you've got the answer and you can actually treat people there and then.
Exactly. And I have to agree with all these examinations, Dix Hall, Pike, Epley, Hints, what we usually do is watch these short YouTube videos just to remind ourselves. And the more you do it, it just becomes easier and easier. And we did actually put all of these videos onto our hearing loss toolkit on the RCGP page. So do check it out.
Thanks. So we've also got in the EKU module some references to some of the videos as well. So I think that's a really good sort of top tip, you know, actually from this to refresh memory. And some of these things are really good we can do in primary care and can be very effective.
And so that was the HI part of the hints. Then N is for the nystagmus. The person follows the GP's finger as they move the finger horizontally. And then you have test of skew. So you ask the person to look straight ahead, then cover each eye in turn, and then uncover it. So basically, the main point of hints, as I mentioned, is really distinguishing between peripheral vertigo and central vertigo. So peripheral vertigo with nystagmus, you might see a unidirectional horizontal nystagmus. With central, you might see it vertical, torsional, and the direction is changing. With the test of skew, they'll have no skew deviation, whereas the central cause, they'll have a skew deviation. And the head impulse test with the peripheral cause, they'll have corrective saccades, which is normal. And with the central cause, they'll have no corrective saccades. So it's kind of distinguishing
the two. Yeah. And I think, as I say, I've not done it before, so I'm going to, after this podcast, I'm going to have a little look at the video and have a little practice at doing it. I guess probably once you get it down, you could do it fairly quickly once you've practiced it a few times.
Yeah, it literally takes less than a minute. And it was interesting because when I was working in A&E as a GP registrar, many people were doing the hints test in the A&E department as well, just to make sure they ruled out any central cause, because it's actually more sensitive than an MRI.
Oh, amazing. There you go. Clinical skills actually really do matter. Good history, good examination. So I guess just reflecting here and thinking about any red flags, I guess that'll be the minority of cases, but is there any particular red flags that would make you worried? I guess like you would say you pick it up on the hints test, but of anything in the history that would make you worried and think about maybe does this patient need a referral?
So red flags specifically associated with acute dizziness that indicate possibly a central cause, like a stroke. You think about abnormal neurological symptoms or signs, like you might be seeing some nystagmus. If they get a new onset headache with their dizziness, and if they've got an abnormal head impulse test. You can obviously extend those sort of red flags if you think of ENT as a whole. So you refer immediately for assessment within 24 hours by ENT or the ED department. If they get a sudden onset, which is usually over 3 days or less, unilateral or bilateral hearing loss, which has occurred within the last 30 days, and it can't be explained by any middle ear causes or external ear causes. Another red flag is unilateral hearing loss, usually associated with some focal neurology. Hearing loss associated with head or neck injury, and hearing loss associated with severe infection like necrotizing otitis externa. They need to be seen within 24 hours. Referral to be seen within 2 weeks is when they've got rapidly progressing hearing loss, which is over a period of 4 to 90 days, which cannot be explained by external middle ear causes.
So I guess it's kind of like your assessment, as I say, do I feel like I need to act now, as in like I'm worried they've had a stroke, or you know, do they need a scan today? I guess that's the question from assessment, which is, I'm thinking back from my 10 years of being a GP, which is very unusual. You know, actually people do self-select, you know, if they're having sort of weakness, the symptoms of possible stroke, you'd hope most people would call 999. Now occasionally you call our admin reception team, and then we've trained them to make sure that they're aware of the FAST test and the, you know, speech is slurred or, you know, collapse or other things that people would call for ambulance or go to hospital for an emergency assessment. But I guess it's that kind of thing. Am I worried? Is it something that could potentially need to act on today, or could I reassess them? Do I need to get an urgent ENT assessment, or am I quite convinced it's a peripheral cause which we can manage in primary care, I guess?
Exactly. And that's spot on. We really need to just listen to their history and really figure out, is it related to things like hyperacusis? You know, it might be unilateral, it might be pulsatile, it might have neurological symptoms. You need to start thinking, oh, this doesn't actually sound like a peripheral cause, it could be potentially central.
Yeah, so we now assess the patient, we examine them, we're quite convinced it's a peripheral cause. I guess a lot of people then would give people advice, maybe some exercises, and then potentially prescribe some medications. I'm not really sure of the evidence based on that. Often people prescribe cyclosine or betahistine. But I guess from our sort of discussion, it's probably worth thinking about what the likely diagnosis is.
Exactly. So if we think about sort of the common thing, so let's say you've diagnosed like a vestibular migraine, automatically you need to start thinking about triggers. Is it due to their stress, tiredness? Is it certain foods, and then your management will be tailored to that. So you will tell them to avoid their specific triggers, give them some lifestyle changes. You might want to give some migraine prophylaxis as well, propranolol, amitriptyline. And you would consider your referral if the patient starts experiencing things like vomiting, causing dehydration, or you're really not sure about the diagnosis. Let's say you get a patient with BPPV and you've diagnosed...
pretty common, I would say. I see a fair few people with that in primary care.
Very, very common BPPV. And their management, actually, wait for waiting is an option for BPPV. Otherwise, if it's still not resolving, you can do the Epley manoeuvre for them. And there's also these exercises that you can give them.
Brandt Giroff exercises that we do, and there's quite good. So if I do the hall pike and it's positive, I do an Epley manoeuvre, then I give the patient information. The great thing now with utilising things like AccuRx or other text messaging, that you can send people the information links, and actually you can send them the exercises to do at home and follow up, which I find really useful, especially for cases like this.
Yes, and those exercises really encourage that sort of patient autonomy to take care of their own health as well. And usually these exercises are performed 3 times a day. So they try to do 5 repetitions per side and they aim for 2 weeks. But if you do the Epley remover, just remind the patient that they may have a bit of vertigo and nausea for up to 48 hours after, not to drive for at least a few hours after the procedure, and avoid sleeping on the side, which brings on the symptoms for a few nights. So those are some patient advice tips after an Epley.
That's really great. Thank you, Davina. And then just thinking about medication, so often people might prescribe medication. If you're assessing if they feel nausea with the dizziness, then maybe we might think about cyclosine, right, or betahistine.
So let's say an example of vestibular neuritis. Even though vestibular neuritis will resolve within a few weeks, usually some patients can be offered a short course, up to 3 days of medication to alleviate their symptoms. And NICE actually advises oral prochlorperazine or, like you said, antihistamines like cinazine, cyclosine, promethazine.
And I guess then obviously noting that some of them could have side effects like slight sedation. And what about driving?
Basically, NICE advises you shouldn't be driving if you take a sedative medication. So if they are taking, let's say, cinazine, promethazine, you would avoid them to drive.
Avoid to drive if they're taking those medications. And I think also then, I think when I was looking it up, DVLA saying if you are having acute attacks of dizziness, then obviously just to be careful and avoid driving around those sort of times of attacks if possible. Obviously, if we're thinking of a peripheral cause rather than a obviously if it's central cause, it'd be very different. If, you know, thinking stroke or something else, then obviously we'd have to tell DVLA, or you'd ask the patient with DVLA about what's going on. Yeah, I guess we've kind of done that assessment. We've seen the patient. We know we've excluded the red flags. We think it's a peripheral cause. We've done an assessment, maybe give exercise, some medication. Would you generally follow these cases up? What safety netting would you do or follow up?
Definitely, I would follow these patients up. I would give them safety netting advice at the end of the consultation, explaining if the symptoms reoccur, they start developing, for example, these neurological symptoms, they definitely need to seek urgent assistance. But urgent referral to secondary care, as I mentioned before, always think central causes. So give them the symptoms of what a stroke could potentially present as, for example. And via the management, I would follow them up after a few weeks or ask them to come back sooner if they feel like the dizziness is worsening or they're getting other associated symptoms. But also as part of the management, you have to really think about the vestibular rehabilitation. Like we mentioned, you might give them specific exercises to do at home to make the balance system less sensitive. You might even consider some psychological intervention because dizziness can be very distressing psychologically. So you can think about CBT if it's actually very affecting, for example, their social life or occupation. And surgery is really rarely indicated, but maybe needed for those sort of acoustic neuromas or intracranial abscesses. So always just be aware of that. And do things like otoscopy or Rinne's and Weber's if you have the patient in front of you.
Yeah, that's really great. So I guess in primary care, it's like a continuum. We might do a certain amount, you know, we're excluding red flags and worrying things in the first consultation, maybe make an initial stab at the differential diagnosis, follow them up, maybe do some further tests, safety netting, like you say, and then making a decision as to whether they might need a referral, whether that's urgent referral or not, if things are worsening or not settling.
Exactly.
And in terms of like ENT, which patients do they really want to see? I guess it's those urgent worrying ones, right?
Yes, so those urgent ones where you have those other associated symptoms, so persistent tinnitus, they might be unilateral, might be pulsatile, they might have some focal neurology, severe infections that are not resolving, things like that.
Yeah, that's really great. And I guess reflecting on this, any final sort of top tips from going through this, you know, a couple of key learning points that you take out from our discussion today?
The top key thing is figure out what the patient means by dizziness and really take that detailed history. As I mentioned, it's a very non-specific term, means something different to everyone, from whether it's true vertigo to lightheadedness to funny turns. And once you have a good history, then start thinking about your bedside examinations. So do have that low threshold for bringing them in and assessing them, especially if you're not quite clear over the phone, just to be safe that you rule out that central cause.
That's really great, thanks. And I guess my tip is I obviously do Epley, and sorry, Hallbike and Epley. I'm going to learn how to do the HINTS test. That's my sort of take-home message today. And obviously thinking about the sort of key differentials and trying to make accurate diagnosis, which we can do in primary care. Thank you so much, Davina, for your conversation today about this important topic. And thank you for listening. My name is Dr. Thomas Round, and you are listening to a Central Knowledge Updates podcast from the RCGP. Thanks for listening.